bezpečnostní expert a poradce izraelských premiérů Dan Shiften. Dobrý den.
Thank you for having me.
Já už jsem několikrát četl vaše slova, kterými jste doslova zvěstoval konec Evropy a popisoval jste, jak tento kontinent páchá sebevraždu. Jak jste to myslel?
Well, there are three elements and I think we should discuss all of them perhaps in some detail. First of all, demographic. A continent that has 1.3 children per family is not sustainable demographically. And I think that if you are in a position where you have to bring in millions of refugees just to have people work so that older people can have pensions, in the long run, it is not sustainable. I also think that it reflects some kind of pessimism. People who have so few children reflect an attitude which I think is not healthy. So that's the first element, the element of demographic suicide. The second is value suicide. Unfortunately, because you want to be nice to everybody, you are not proud enough of your heritage. Europe has a great heritage, and people are so afraid to be proud of it that I think in the long run, people who are not proud of their past don't have a future. And the third element, if you pursue what has started now, and I hope you will not, but if you pursue bringing millions of refugees from countries where people have a political culture that destroyed their own country, and now they bring the same political culture into Europe, in the long run, not only will you have a major problem of integration, very major, but something even worse. The response to so many refugees from such a different culture will bring right-wing elements, radical right-wing elements up. It is already happening. And then you have a polarized society. You have a society where you have one group that believes we should bring as many refugees as possible, and another group that considers that to be terrible. And then the clash between these two groups can undermine the European way of life. So when I say suicide, I exaggerate. I don't think Europe is committing suicide. But I'm saying this is very bad in the long run, and people are doing things that feel right for the short run, which have very serious implications in the long run.
Dobře, když vezmu ten první důvod a ten třetí a dáme dohromady, tak to vypadá, že ta současná imigrační vlna, kdy do Evropy přicházejí statisíce nebo chcete-li miliony uprchlíků z těch zemí, o kterých jste mluvil, tak to je vlastně to největší nebezpečí, které hrozí Evropě.
I think the biggest threat is a combination of three elements that I brought, but also it's not just immigration, it is the question who is coming. If you would take immigrants, say from the Ukraine, in one or two generations they will assimilate into the Czech Republic and you will have Czechs here. But if you look at what happened in France with Arab immigrants, you will see that the second generation is more radical than the first generation, and the third generation is even more radical than the second generation. And what you have is people who are born in France, speak French, have gone through the French education system, and nevertheless have radical attitudes, some of them, not many, but a number that is sufficient to be dangerous, goes to ISIS and comes back as people who will pursue terrorism. And again, the moment people are not integrated and live in their own neighborhoods and nobody comes in these neighborhoods and they treat women the way they used to treat women in the Arab world three generations ago, and you have new people who are coming in the millions, then you will have a response inside your society. Look at what is happening in France with Marine Le Pen.
Dobře, pokud říkáte, že minimálně na té francouzské zkušenosti není možné prostě imigrovat lidi ze zemí s jinou kulturou, tedy řekněme muslimské nebo arabské imigranty, tak jinými slovy, co by měla Evropa teď dělat? Vzhledem k tomu, že jí na brány, obrazně řečeno, buší statisíce a miliony právě arabských a muslimských uprchlíků.
Look, if you will accept millions of people who are knocking at your gate today, you will have hundreds of millions coming, because there are many people around the world who are hungry. You know how many tens of millions, perhaps hundreds of millions, are in Calcutta and in India who want to come. If they will learn that they can come to Europe and get welfare, one day you get up in the morning and there is no Europe. Numbers matter. There is a major difference between getting small numbers and large numbers. Now, Muslims are different Muslims. You look at 250 million Muslims in Indonesia, they have a different culture. You look at 180 million Muslims in India, they have a different culture. The Middle East, Afghanistan, Pakistan has shown, I'm speaking about experience, empirical data, that the way they behave as a collective, their individuals are fine, but as a collective is dangerous, and I would simply not let them in, because otherwise you will first have hundreds of thousands, then millions, then tens of millions, and then you get one day in the morning, you get up and there is no Europe.
Je ta věc takhle černobílá, jako když budu mluvit o těch bránách, buď je nechat úplně zavřené, nebo je nechat úplně otevřené, není nějaké řešení, které by zároveň splnilo to, co Evropané bezesporu v sobě mají, a to je, řekněme, nějaký pocit humanitární sounáležitosti nebo potřeby pomoci těm, kteří jsou potřební?
The question is one of numbers. In other words, if you say we can accept this and this number, okay? And it is a reasonable number that you can integrate. And I can select the people who will integrate in my society. That is fine. But if you say, and this is what Angela Merkel basically said, no top number. In other words, because they need, we will open up. Now, there are, again, there are hundreds of millions of people in need in the world. You will have to put the border, you will have to put the limit somewhere one day. So better think about it before you come to a point where you need to take radical measures in order to deal with a radical problem. At the moment, the problem is not radical. So deal with it in a considered way, thinking about it, asking yourself, how much can we absorb? What kind of people do we want to absorb? For instance, are we willing to absorb people who treat their women like cattle? Are you willing to do it? Or do you say a culture that treats women like that is not a culture that will fit into Europe and will not integrate and will not assimilate into the Czech society? So you can make a decision who you want to come and who you don't want to come, because there are enough people who need it from different cultures.
Tomu rozumím. Na druhou stranu není to příliš velké generalizování v momentě, kdy o těch lidech, kteří přicházíte z té jiné kultury, kteří přicházejí z té jiné kultury, to znamená, řekněme, z arabského světa, řeknete jako o bloku, že to je kultura, která se prostě k ženám chová tak, jak by se u nás s největší pravděpodobností nikdo chovat nechtěl. Není to příliš velká generalizace?
No, I'm not generalizing. I'm saying to you that Muslims from Indonesia or Muslims from India are different from Muslims from Pakistan and Muslims from Afghanistan and Muslims from the Arab world. And also I'm saying you can have a selection on an individual basis. People who come with a certain background, who are willing to behave in a different way, you must have some kind of generalization, because people behave as a collective. I don't think it is an accident that you don't have many places in Europe where other communities are closed, don't let anybody else in, the police is afraid to come in. If in Paris, in one night, they burned 34,000 cars, this is not something that happened to any community, it happened to a specific community. So I'm not saying they're all the same. I'm saying there is a difference between individuals who can be very nice and a collective that has certain values, and collectives have values, okay? So we know it inside Europe that different people behave in a different way. For instance, if I were a Czech, I would be more willing to accept people from the Ukraine that need it very, very much than people from Afghanistan, for instance.
No a pak je tady ta otázka, jak to zařídit s tím, abychom dokázali rozčlenit ty přicházející lidi přes hranice Evropy podle toho, které bychom tady případně na kontinentu Evropa, v zemích Evropy chtěli a které ne. Vy jako Izraelec máte zkušenost s tím, jak je obtížné nebo není obtížné zabezpečit průchodnost nebo neprůchodnost hranice. Jak to chcete udělat v momentě, kdy tou hranicí je na jedné straně například 1000 řeckých ostrovů?
Well, first of all, the more you accept everybody, the more people will come to your borders. This is the interesting paradox. Let me give you an example that sounds terrible, but is true. Mm-hmm. The more people you save from drowning in the Mediterranean, the more people will drown in the Mediterranean. Because when everybody knows that you're saving people from the Mediterranean and giving them a place in Europe, the more people will come to the Mediterranean, and then also more will drown.
Ale ten argument opravdu zní trošku strašlivě, protože vy jinými slovy říkáte, že by pobřežní síly Evropské unie nebo států na Středozemním moři neměly ty uprchlíky zachraňovat, měly by je nechat utopit se ve Středozemním moři.
I'm starting with a realistic reality without you even asking what to do or not to do. I'm just saying, if you save anybody who is about to drown in the Middle East, in the Mediterranean, the inevitable result is more people will come to the Mediterranean, and therefore more people will drown because you cannot save everybody. So first of all, I'm giving you reality. You cannot criticize reality. You can say it's untrue. And please do, then we will have an analytical discussion. But first, I'm putting to you, what do you want to do? You're the European. I'm telling you what the reality is. Now let's speak about the Israeli experience, because you asked about it and I think it's interesting. Yes. We had people coming in very, very large numbers compared to the population from the Arab world, Jews who came to Israel. They wanted to change their culture. When they came to Israel, they wanted to change their culture, and they changed their culture. For instance, they changed their attitude to women. They changed their attitude in terms of having a patriarchal family. And if you look at it, two, three generations from the time that they came, they became part of Israelis, of Israel, as people with a Western European culture. To Israel, but they wanted to change their culture. If I would have seen it in the Arab world, I would say, no problem. But what I have seen, and again, empirically, before we even discuss policy, empirically, what I have seen in France is very, very different. What I see in many places in Europe is very, very different. And I see a distinction between one community and another community. And therefore I say, you must choose. And if you will just be nice in order to be loved today, you are doing it at the expense of your next generation and the generation afterwards. And here is the worst thing. If you will behave today irresponsibly, and the radical right will rise to power, and it is already happening in parts of Europe that they become politically much more important, the policy will turn to the other extreme. So sometimes one extreme of let us open up everything without limitation leads to the opposite extreme. And what I'm advocating is find a middle way where you get refugees, you absorb refugees, but the numbers are limited. They're limited to the absorption capacity of these countries. They're limited to the goodwill of people who are willing to accept them in these countries. For instance, I very strongly oppose the German attitude of saying, we will accept millions and then you will have quota. And everybody will have a quota and every country must accept so many people from the people that we accepted in. If I were a Czech, I would not accept it. I would say it is my sovereign decision. You cannot decide for me who will live in my country, with all due respect to Brussels and to the European Union. So I think that the Czechs must deal with the future of Czechia.
K tomu dlužno podotknout, že česká vláda se zatím staví velice odmítavě k kvótám, které jsou nastaveny ze strany Bruselu na příjem uprchlíků. Pojďme se ale bavit, prosím, ještě o jednom tématu. Tím tématem je Sýrie. Jak nebezpečné místo to je, vzhledem k tomu, že se bavíme o zemi nebo území, na kterém současně bojují turecké, kurdské, Asadovy jednotky, povstalecké jednotky, americké a ruské?
Well, let us say something general about the Middle East and then we'll come to Syria. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, the whole Middle East has dysfunctioning entities. It's not just Syria. It is Syria and Lebanon and Iraq and Yemen and Libya and South Sudan. The whole region is full with entities that are dysfunctioning for a very long time, only we have not heard about it because we have one dictator that killed everybody else. Saddam Hussein in Iraq, Assad in Syria, Gaddafi in Libya. So it looked as if it was a stable reality because one dictator killed everybody else. What we see in the last 5 years is everybody killing everybody. And by the way, I'm not sure there are good guys and bad guys. Most people there are bad guys. In other words, when you have one community that is stronger, it will destroy the other community because it is weaker. So what you have is not Assad and everybody else is a saint. Look at Jabhat al-Nusra or Jabhat Fatah al-Shams, as they call themselves now. These are terrorists from Al-Qaeda. Look at ISIS, these are barbarians. Look at the Assad regime, it's a barbaric regime. Look at how Russia behaves in Syria, it behaves barbarically. So you look at the different rebels and you don't see anybody who is really willing to build a society. The only possible exception is the Kurds. What the Kurds have done in the north of Iraq is very impressive. Mm. What the Kurds perhaps could do in the north of Syria, I'm not sure. It is much less transparent. We know much less about what is going on there, but it looks basically good. But the overwhelming majority of the forces in the region are using an enormous amount of violence and are willing to slaughter populations in order to get their way. Unfortunately, I don't think Iraq has any hope for the future, Syria has any hope for the future, Yemen, Libya, and it is spreading in the Middle East because the only difference you have among the Arab states are those who have already collapsed and those who are afraid to collapse and therefore are not doing what is necessary in order to meet the challenges of the 21st century. You don't have a single democracy in the Arab world. You don't have a single country that has pluralism, a single country that treats women properly and equally, a single country that has advance in science, in technology. So the ability to function in the 21st century is simply not there.
No, mluvíte o tom, že žádný z těch států, které jste jmenoval v tom regionu, nemá žádnou nadějnou budoucnost, ale nějakou budoucnost mají. Tak co od těch států a od toho, co se v tom regionu děje, můžeme očekávat? Můžeme očekávat, že to všechno bude jen horší a bude to, řekněme, potenciální ohnisko daleko většího konfliktu?
It's not a potential big conflict, it is one big conflict. Many big conflicts, okay? I don't see a positive future for the Middle East in the foreseeable future. Look, I'm not saying political cultures cannot change or that Muslim political cultures cannot change. In Turkey, we've had two changes of political culture in less than 100 years. Mm. In 1923, we had the Ataturk cultural change, and now we have the counter-revolution of Erdogan. So political change or political cultures can change. The question is, do we assume that every change must be positive? You see, the most important change in the Arab world in the last 100 years was a negative one, the change in the direction of radical Islam. So is a positive change possible? Yes, principally it is possible. Do I see the buds of a positive change? Very little. I see it in Tunisia, okay, and I hope very, very much that it will succeed, and I think we should help them at least to try and succeed. But in the area at large, in the most important entities in the area, I don't see it. And even if I will see it today, it doesn't take a few months or a few years. It takes decades and generations. At the moment, the changes are negative. Let me give you an example of a problem that I don't know how to deal with. Mm. Egypt is on the verge of hunger. And it is very important to save Egypt from hunger. But how do you save 90 million? You cannot help them from the outside. It's too big. From the inside, I don't see the cultural revolution beginning that will save Egypt. So the situation at the moment is indeed hopeless, and the conflicts in the region are on a very high level, practically everybody against everybody else. Sunnis against Shiites, inside the Sunni community, inside the Shiite community, inside every country. Unfortunately, I see a few islands of relative stability. Jordan is a good example, Egypt is a good example, Morocco is a good example. In the Gulf you have some more responsible entities. But even the people who are relatively stable don't have the structure to deal with the 21st century. Egypt is relatively stable. How do you deal with the sustainability, the economic sustainability of Egypt? Let me tell you, as an Israeli, I feel very bad about Egypt not being economically sustainable, because Egypt is the only anchor of relative stability, and with Egypt collapsing or being in a very, very difficult situation, the whole region will be very different. So from an Israeli point of view, this is a very negative reality.
Mr. Shiftan, thank you for the interview.
Thank you.
Thank you.